Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. You guys, I am so excited. My new course on behavior, the Practical Behavior Approach, is officially done and ready to go. Enrollment is only open until April 30th, and if you are someone who is supporting a child with frequent challenging behaviors, listen in because this course is for you. This course was designed for any teacher, special ed or gen ed, clinician or parent working with a child with frequent negative behaviors. This course is going to prepare you with a comprehensive toolbox. You're going to have all the tools you need to prevent problem behaviors, respond when problem behaviors happen, and to build those missing skills. We go in depth into why behavior happens, looking at contributing factors like diagnosis, trauma, anxiety, and sensory needs. This is truly a cohesive course where strategies are rooted in the science of applied behavior analysis, but also rooted in trauma-informed practices. So you're going to have both perspectives to develop this really robust framework of strategies that is truly going to be effective. So if you are feeling burnt out, overwhelmed, or out of answers on how to support your kids, click on the link in the show notes and learn a little bit more about this course and how the training and all of the downloads and tools are going to really help support you on this journey to helping your child be successful. I can't fully express how excited I am to get this course in your hands. Click on the link in show notes. Let me know if you have any questions. And when you get started, let me know how it goes.
Hi, I'm Sasha Long, special ed teacher and board certified behavior analyst. Welcome to the Autism Helper Podcast. I'm here to explore different strategies to improve the lives of individuals with autism.
Hi guys, today I am interviewing Rosemarie Griffin. She's sharing her 5 tips for working with students with limited language. Rosemarie is an SLP and a BCBA. And when we start chatting, I call her a dual threat because I think having that much knowledge of communication while knowing all of those ABA principles and being really able to work with students kind of from both perspectives is huge. So she said that the term used for SLPs and BCBAs who are duly certified is unicorn, which is way nicer than dual threat. But I can just see so much power and impact that you can have as a professional that has that level of expertise in both areas. And you can really make some big changes in a really efficient way because we're coming at those behavior change goals in a really communication-based perspective, which is what all of our kids need. So like I said, she's sharing 5 tips. They are super actionable, super user-friendly. She also has a download in the show notes that you can go grab for free. I think this would be an awesome tool to print out for your team and really get everyone on the same page, which is, spoiler alert, one of the tips. Let's jump right in. Hi, Rose. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so excited about this.
Thanks for having me. I'm real excited to be on today.
I am very intrigued by the dual certification because I feel like you are such like a threat being an SLP and a BCBA.
That is very sweet of you. We do have a name for ourselves because there are less than 425 people now that are duly certified. So some people call us unicorns. So that, yes. Yeah. Pretty exciting.
That's even better than a threat.
Right, exactly. That's why I was saying it. Yeah, sounds a little nicer. But yeah, it's a really cool way to be able to help our clients. And now with having ABA Speech as a blog, to be able to come on and just talk about putting ABA and speech therapy into one and really helping people increase their communication skills.
Absolutely. I'm so passionate about, you know, interdisciplinary collaboration that it's so nice to see it under one umbrella and someone that, you know, is an expert in both areas explaining how they work together.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, I really, you know, I've loved it. I love the field. I really, it might sound hokey, but I've been doing this 16 years as a speech therapist and then 8 being dually certified. And I love being able to help people increase their skills and help people who are nonverbal find a way to communicate, because it can be so very difficult for some students to find a way to communicate that it's really a joy to be able to see that happen.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Love that. And that, do you find that when collaborating either with SLPs or with BCBAs, because you have both certifications, you're able to potentially like bring those team members together a little bit easier?
Yes. I mean, I really am in such a nice position where I work that, you know, I do work in an ABA type center as a speech language pathologist, and I work in a public school as a speech language pathologist. Those are my main roles there. But the BCBAs that I am consulting with, because we do a lot of outside consultation, and I think that's a really good model for everybody involved on the team. It really is a lot easier for me than somebody else, just because I have both certifications, and oftentimes because I've been in the same area for about 8 years now, I am talking and collaborating with people that I know. So all of that building rapport and things of that nature is something that I've already done. So I definitely am at an advantage in that sense. I know that it can be a lot harder when you're dealing with people who are coming in from the outside. And the very most important thing is just to build a rapport with people.
Absolutely. I know. I think sometimes we skip the rapport stuff.
Yes. Yes. And oftentimes, you know, I teach a class for graduate students here at Kent State, and I talk a lot about, it's an ethics class, but we talk a lot about the fact that when you're coming in as a consultant, you're usually, I'd say 90% of the time, and I don't know if this has been your situation, but you are coming in at a time where things are not going well, and it could be a crisis type of situation. So all that kind of building rapport does sound nice in theory, but it's not always realistic.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you're coming in those situations, people might not have always asked for your help, which is always, you know, an uncomfortable dynamic. Exactly. And that consultative role, like you're stepping into someone's home, like a teacher's classroom is their home, and you're coming in and you're like, hey, let me tell you what you're doing wrong here.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, I've always been the kind of person, and that's why I love what I do, is that I'm constantly learning new things. And so I always try to be the kind of person, anytime I'm in a mentor type situation, for me, I always try to pick somebody's brain and learn as much as I can from them and implement what I think will be really beneficial for the student. But it can make people feel very defensive. And so I absolutely understand that. And being a speech therapist and a BCBA, or somebody who is in special education, you're not always going to see eye to eye on things. And so I think the way that we deal with collaboration and being mindful that everybody has their own specialty areas and being cognizant of that is very important, because we don't always have to agree with something somebody has said. And it gets kind of difficult in that sense.
Yeah, that's a great point, because there's not just one right solution. There's a lot of different ways to do things.
Exactly.
All right. So I'm excited today. We're sharing 5 tips for working with students with limited language. And I love a good checklist or numbered list.
Yes, that's good.
It feels more approachable. You know,
yes.
I think it can feel overwhelming whether you've been in this field for a really long time or you're brand new. There are certain kids that it can seem challenging on how to figure out the best ways to communicate and to help them communicate what they, you know, are thinking and what they want and need.
Absolutely. And that's really how I even got into applied behavior analysis, is just working in a private center school that was using ABA and seeing so many students who were 8, 9, 10, 18, who had no way to communicate, and really being able to learn about the science of applied behavior analysis and apply that and see students who are not communicating, being able to communicate that they want to eat French fries or that they want to go outside or they want to go for a walk. So the things that I'm going to share today will help you get started. I think sometimes, just like you said, it's overwhelming. How do I reach that student who is running from the classroom? How do I reach that student who doesn't want to sit at the table? Those are all real challenges. And if you kind of follow these tips and strategies, hopefully some of this information might be new. And I've compiled this into a quick start guide that will also be available for people who are listening today.
Awesome. I'm going to link that in the show notes. Great. And yeah, like that's a great point when you think about problem behavior. Like whenever I talk about decreasing behavior, you know, challenging behavior, I first am talking about the positive. Like what communication skills do we have and what communication skills are we missing? Because that's where it all starts.
Absolutely. And that's what happens with a lot of students that I've met in private placements is that for whatever reason, people haven't been able to reach the student. They haven't been able to help the student find their voice. And then students develop these intricate problem behavior repertoires, and that's kind of how they're navigating the world. So the idea is always that we want to help our students increase those communication skills and decrease that problem behavior that's such a barrier for them learning.
And it has to go together. You know, you can't just decrease yes. positive behavior, negative behavior without replacing with anything.
Right. And it's a team approach for sure.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
All right. So what's our first tip?
So our first tip is to look at assessment. So I love the VBMAP assessment that was created by Dr. Sundberg. And I don't know if you've talked about that yet on the podcast, but it's such a great assessment in the fact that a lot of the times we will give our students who are nonverbal different types of standardized assessments. And when we're using those standardized assessments, we're not able to really get a good snapshot of how the student is learning. And so the VBMAP really looks at how is a student requesting, how is a student labeling, how is a student using group skills, and all those different things that we may not get to see on a standardized assessment. So if you've addressed that assessment yet in the podcast?
You know, I tend to talk more about the ABLES, and people always ask me if it's because I prefer one or the other, and I don't. I just, you know, you kind of have a more familiar repertoire with one, but I mentioned the VBMAP, of course.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think both assessments are great. I don't even lean one towards, I lean one way towards the other, but it's not because I prefer, you know.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I just love that assessment. And I think if you don't have access to that assessment, something that's really good to do is to just kind of analyze how a student is requesting. Because I have three kids of my own, and there is a lot of requesting that goes on. They're all under the age of 10. So I can tell you when everybody gets home from school or in the morning, it's requesting nonstop. They want pancakes, a waffle, get my clothes. You know, like there's a lot of that that goes on. And so I think that even if we don't have access to that assessment or the ABLES or whatever works for you, is that we really want to observe the student and get a baseline measure of how is the student currently communicating. Is the student, like you said, are they using any sign language? Are they using a device? Are they just pulling you to what they want? It's really good for us to get a baseline because that requesting of specific things is how we really get our wants and needs met. And that's really how students learn. I do something, I get something, and that's going to make their communication feel very powerful. So if you have a student, I had a student before that really loved bubbles. And so when we started working on requesting, we worked on bubbles. So anytime the student would request for bubbles, they would get bubbles. And so that builds such a learning history for that student that they understand, hey, this isn't so hard. You know, at first, Miss Rose was helping prompt me to sign bubbles, and then we systematically fade those prompts and they're doing it on their own. And I think that helps the student feel really empowered.
That's a great suggestion. I love, you know, an informal assessment that's so easy to do as observing. I don't think we observe enough because it feels, you know, luxurious. I'm just going to sit and watch this child.
Right.
But you can learn so much by just kind of pausing and taking a moment to really watch and learn. And the term assessment can be so intimidating, but it can be something as simple as a 10-minute observation.
Yes, I think that's really important to include for students who are at that language level as well. So that's tip number one, start with assessment.
And, you know, something to note too, if people are not familiar with the VB map, yeah, it is a super user-friendly assessment. It is affordable. It's $60 on Amazon, something like that.
Yeah. And now I'm old school because I'm old, but I like to use the protocol books, but it is an app now. So you can it all online. And if you're into that, which a lot of my coworkers are, then that's a way to go as well.
And it's, you know, you don't have to be a BCBA or an SLP to do it. A parent can do it. A teacher can do it. It's super user friendly.
Right. Definitely.
All right. Tip number two.
Okay. Tip number two is student preferences, making sure that we understand what our student loves and enjoys. And I can tell you from working with students who have more behavioral barriers that this can sound really easy, but it really can be very, very difficult. I know that I had a student, I've used his videos in some of my webinars, and I would see him at the private placement school, and he was 8 when I first met him. He had no way to communicate besides problem behavior. And he really, this is the kicker, did not enjoy anything. He didn't like to watch a movie on the iPad. He didn't like other things that you think most students would love and enjoy, like light up toys and, you know, all those kind of go-tos. He wasn't into that. So I really had to rack my brain and think outside of the box for that student. And if you have a student like that, something called a preference assessment will be beneficial. It may not be the end all be all, but it's going to help you understand. It has lots of different potential reinforcers listed. And it goes back to that observation piece. You could give that to the parent and say, you know, let me know what your student likes. But I really like to kind of use that preference assessment and say, oh, you know, I might have a squirt bottle. Maybe the student will like that. Or, oh, you know, the student might like water balloons or things that we don't always think of, because I know that I have a lot of potential reinforcers in my office, but when a student doesn't like those, we need to think outside of the box and think about what is really going to be motivating for them.
And be creative. You know, sometimes we get kind of stuck in our arsenal, our treasure chest, yes, of potential reinforcers, like you said. And I always think about, too, looking at what, you know, quote unquote, non-traditional reinforcers, because some of our kids like untraditional topics or activities. I was just sharing this story in a PD last week. I had a student many, many years ago who was obsessed with Maury Povich.
Oh my
and gosh. He wanted to role play being on Maury and giving the DNA test results. And it was not traditional, but it was the most high power reinforcer that I had seen because he was so motivated. He would work all day if he knew we could play Maury Povich. And I was like, cool, dude, we'll play Maury Povich.
See, that's amazing. And there's power in that. And I always say when I'm presenting, we need to hypothetically or theoretically ask our clients, what are you into today? I know you love Dairy Queen just from following you on Instagram. I love coffee, right? So some days it's Starbucks, but some days it's Dunkin'. You know, you just never know. So we need to ask our students, because just like you said, if we can find out what they really love and enjoy for your student, that was really great because that was a really powerful reinforcer. Now, for a student who really doesn't have a way to communicate with the world, us finding out what they love and enjoy, it could really help help us help them communicate. So if we find out they love bubbles, then we'll work on requesting bubbles. Or if we find out they love movie, we'll make sure that they have access to a movie and things of that nature.
Absolutely. Love it. All right. Tip number three.
Okay. So tip number three is, how will the student communicate? This is such an important thing for us to think about. And it goes back to it all being team-based. So is the student going to use an AAC device, an augmentative communication device? Is the student going to use pictures? You know, is the student going to use sign language, or are they verbalizing? And I think we really, there's so many things to take into consideration there. It's really great when we work as a team, and really having the parents involved as well is very, very important as well. I've had students who they've been using a device and everything's going great, and then we meet before the IEP meeting, and then they ask about working on verbalizing. And I didn't know that was important to the parents and things like that. So we need to make sure that we obviously have everybody on board and are watching the client and seeing what their preferences are. What are they going to? How is it easy to prompt them to communicate as well?
Yeah, because not all parents are going to be necessarily on board with, you know, one communication method or the other. Actually, a client I had recently, we had kind of a big struggle with the school district because the student and the parents really wanted him to use Prolico on his phone. And the district really wanted the AAC device that they had paid for. But, you know, he was 17 and the AAC device is big and it's right. clunky and it's not cool. And it was unfortunate that the school district wasn't initially more receptive to what, you know, mom and dad and the child wanted.
Right. That's so very important. And, you know, I have another story to share. I met a student in sixth grade. He had no way to communicate for just a handful of reasons. And I thought, oh, when I met this student, I thought he is going to be somebody who uses an augmentative communication device. And this is really going to be great because he really did not have a way to communicate. And we took data, we ran manding sessions, working on requesting, and the data was not going anywhere. He still needed prompting because he really could not shape a point, which we just didn't realize in the very beginning. So we pivoted and we started working on using sign language. And so we did have a little bit of people saying, well, I don't know sign language, but I got on this really amazing website called lifeprint.com, and it shows you all the ASL signs. So we found out, we went to that preference assessment, we found out what the student loved and enjoyed. We worked on those different things when we were working on requesting, trained all the staff, because that's what's so important to make sure everybody's on the same page. And, you know, we're working on a lot of early learner skills too. So following directions, echoics, and things of that nature. And the student now is able to verbalize and is able to use sign language and really has been amazing, to the point that some people like have subbed in the room and said, wow, so-and-so says so many things. And I mean, if that's not the reason to keep getting up every day to go to work and help your clients, I don't know what is. So it's really powerful when we make those decisions together.
That's amazing. And I love that story to be able to show that even though we're using something like sign or AC, there is that common misconception that that's going to in some ways negatively impact the ability to verbally communicate. But, you know, as I'm sure you've seen many times over, it actually can help a child verbally communicate more.
Oh, yes. I mean, it was amazing to see this learner and to be working in such a team dynamic where the teacher was working on communication and paraprofessionals were working on communication. And I was obviously working on communication as the speech therapist. To see that student go from not being able to communicate to being able to communicate, it was just really powerful to see that change in that student's life and just the ripple effect. You know, he can communicate with people he knows, he can communicate with people he doesn't know as well. And being able to help somebody in a very specific way that's going to just really change their life is really an amazing feeling.
So let's talk to the teacher that, you know, maybe elementary teacher gets a new student. You and I probably been in similar situations that comes with, you know, limited language and limited ability to communicate. There isn't some system in place.
Right.
Like, where do you start?
Right. I mean, I would say start with definitely collaborating with the speech therapist and seeing what type of assessment you can do together to see what the student loves and enjoys. I think it all goes back to that. And then I think what's so important and really what I try to always do with every single client is to make sure that students have embedded communication opportunities throughout the day. So if I have a student who's working on requesting, I, as a speech language pathologist, make sure that I talk with the teacher about that. I talk with the paraprofessionals about that. And you know, it's so hard, Sasha, because we don't have a lot of time to get that training in. But I know you talk about training a lot. And I just have tried all different types of ways to train staff. Sometimes when I see the student for speech, if it's a new paraprofessional, I'll have them sit with me so I can work with them about how we're working on requesting. And I think that's really important, is building rapport with people and reinforcing people who are going to be running that type of communication programming across a student's day. And I think for people, I'm very lucky in the fact that I work with really dedicated professionals, but it is very exciting to be able to see that kind of growth in somebody. And so that inherently is just very reinforcing. So I would say just making sure that whatever communication approach you're going to take is that it's embedded across the learner's day and everybody's on board with what the strategies are.
That's great advice. Yeah. And it's, the team approach is key, and you want to kind of get someone to drink the Kool-Aid, like you said, to start seeing that progress, because they're going to want to keep doing it more and more and kind of, you know, be addicted like we all are. We want to keep seeing it.
Absolutely. Yes. That is a good way to put it. Yes. You want everybody to be on board and drink the Kool-Aid, and you just, the proof is right there when you see it. So it's really a cool experience.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Okay, tip number four.
Tip number four goes right into what we've been talking about, which is teamwork. So understanding who is on the team. So I think this is so important from any kind of viewpoint. I always tell this story that about 2 years ago, we have a really amazing conference here in Ohio. It's called Milestones, and it's about autism. And now it's a 2-day conference. And I was doing a group presentation about interprofessional collaboration. And I had just found out that a student that I had for about a year had another speech therapist they were working with. And I felt like such a fraud when I was going to get up the next day, because this was news to me. And it really wasn't like the parent was trying to hide it. They really honestly weren't. But it was something that just kind of, because the student was in a private placement, I didn't really get access to the parents all the time. It was a student that lived far from the center. So I wasn't seeing the student's parents at pickup or drop off. And while I had a good communication and rapport with the parent, it just wasn't something that we thought to talk about. So I always say the very first thing to think about is who is really on the team. Because if you're listening as a teacher, just understanding, you know, does so-and-so have outside services and what do those look like? And can we talk to those people? Because that's really important to have that communication loop.
And sometimes we get a little defensive, like, what do you mean there's someone else working with him after school?
Right.
But in my mind, it's always the more the better. You know, let's bring more people in, because that's going to help be, you know, make a difference for the child.
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, if there's more people that are working on these same similar goals, that we're really going to help the students. So just really identifying who the team is, making sure that you're able to, number one, know who it is and build rapport with them and try to get the parent to sign permission so you can talk to team members and really have that communication loop. I think that's so important. And I think that's so important for our students because we want to have more of a narrow focus for our students, meaning that we may have 4 or 5 goals, but everybody's working on them. There's a lot of power in those kind of opportunities.
And thinking outside the box a little bit about who's on that team at home, because for sure, obviously parents, but maybe there's a babysitter or a grandparent or an older sibling that spends a big majority, you know, of the afternoons or weekends with our students. It's always nice to loop those people in as well. Sometimes we forget about that.
Exactly. And that's half the battle, is just knowing who makes up that team. And then just always, I think the older I get and the more kids of my own that I have, just understanding that, you know, parents are so important on the team. And I think sometimes whatever setting you're working on, sometimes we can feel nervous about talking with parents because maybe we're afraid of what they're going to say, or maybe we're afraid that we're not doing enough, or there's all these different questions that we may have in our mind. But I always say that, you know, it's great to have some kind of communication, obviously, set up with the parents and making sure, you know, if you're doing an IEP or something of that nature, that you send a draft home early of the IEP and ask for feedback. Because I think that's such a great time for parents to say, like, hey, this is what's really important to me. And sometimes that information can be eye-opening for the team. And it's good for us to get a pulse on how that parent's really feeling.
It's such a simple thing to do that really shifts, I think, the whole dynamic of the IEP meeting. Because the parent's not coming in with it finished. Like, they feel like it's too late to throw their 2 cents in because the document's been more or less created. And even if, you know, sometimes I've heard people say, well, oh, we could always add it in if they needed it. But when it's typed and all ready to go, it doesn't feel like you can add that in at that point.
Right. And I think a lot of the times when we're working with students with autism, we have such a large team. We may have advocates and we may have outside consultants and things of that nature. And, you know, I've been doing this 16 years, but certain meetings I walk into, I'm kind of like nervous. And you know what I mean? Like, I don't care how long you've been doing it. There's a lot. We're talking about somebody's whole academic year. I mean, that's a big responsibility. And so I think that, yeah, if we talk about things ahead of time, the best that we can, and on the day of the IEP, parents feel heard and we can implement and embed some of those things that they've discussed. I think that makes for, like you said, like it makes it a better feeling in that IEP meeting.
Absolutely. All right. What's our last tip?
So tip number 5 is to start work on, I use the word manding, but it's really requesting. Working on requesting very specific requests. So finding out what the student loves and enjoys, and then working on those things and requesting, or we call them manding sessions in the field of ABA, is very, very important because students are going to learn, I do something, I get something, and that's going to be the most important thing for them. Because if we really think about academics and school, it all starts with communication. And I know that everybody listening wants to reach every single student and wants every single student to find their voice and have a way to communicate with the world. And that's really what's going to teach students to do that. They're going to understand that they have power, and that power lies in their communication.
Can you talk a little bit about what that looks like in a classroom and maybe how that could look differently in a preschool versus a high school class?
Yeah, that's a great idea. So I definitely think setting up a time, if you have a student who has no way to communicate, making sure that we would say having one requesting session in the morning and one requesting session in the afternoon, and maybe those are 10 to 15 minutes long based on your student and how long they're able to sit and, you know, things of that nature, making sure that you identify things that the student could potentially want to request. I think that's very important, and having those things readily available to you so that the student, the idea is, you know, the gold standard would be the student would think about something, not even see it, and request it. But oftentimes we need to make sure that the student can see something so they know that it's available. And so maybe they see a book that they really love, and so then they sign book and they get the book. And it is going to look different in a high school setting. I work primarily in middle school and high school, and it can be a little bit harder because sometimes our learners may not like things that are age appropriate for school. You know, it kind of gets into that whole thing of, you know, I used to train on that a lot, and I kind of feel bad about that, like making sure that everything is age appropriate. I think it's important for our older learners to have access to and exposure to things that are age appropriate. But if you're dealing with somebody who is in middle school or high school and they have absolutely no way to communicate and they really love something like Bubbles or something that is on YouTube, like Bubble Up, and I really think it's important to give them access to those things because it's going to help them communicate.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
Yeah. So I think that's really important. And just making sure that you have a time, maybe 10 minutes in the morning, 10 minutes in the afternoon, and then you're taking some type of data that's going to work for your classroom system as far as what types of things did the learner request, did they need any prompting to request those things, et cetera, et cetera.
And having it, you know, in their day, in their schedule, in their centers. And would you say that's something a paraprofessional could be trained to do as well, like during the school day?
Yes, absolutely. I think that there's a lot of power in that. And I, as a speech language pathologist, try to have a shared data sheet with classroom teachers. So I will have not only the requesting, but if that's what's most important at the time, we might just have one data sheet and it has those two requesting sessions. And when the student is with the parapro, they're taking data on that. And then when I see the student for a speech therapy session, I take data on that. And then I go in and review how things are going and then would make recommendations based on that data.
And talk about creating staff buy-in. I mean, if you're using the exact same sheet together, like that's really clearly communicating, like we're on the same team, you're a teacher too, we're doing this together.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, if you can, yeah, I mean, that's really made a difference in so many students that I work with in a public school and an ABA center, is that shared data sheet. It may seem like it's really not that big of a deal. And we do ours on Google Drive. So we are still doing data that way. Some places I know are moving to data that you take on an iPad and things like that. And while I think that's all great, I do think it takes away that collaborative component from my perspective being the speech therapist, because when you take things by hand, I do think it's an easier way to talk about things and everybody can kind of see it. It's all there. And so I do think that shared data sheet is a really nice way to work together.
And like you said, seeing, you know, how did Johnny do in the morning? Oh, he, you know, he kind of had a rough morning. Let me see how he is this afternoon. So you can kind of reference your own data that day against the previous few sessions easily.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's great.
Oh my gosh. This was so helpful. This was a great little list and I'm excited. And the quick start guide will be in the show notes, because I think this would be a great tool to print out and give to your staff, because as we kind of kept talking about in every tip, this is something that you want that team approach to.
Yes. Yes. I will make that available and we'll make sure that everybody has that. And it goes over all the different things that we talked about today.
Great. And Rose, can you share a little bit about your website and where people can find you if they haven't found you yet?
Oh, yes, absolutely. My website is abaspeech.org. And I have a blog where I do a lot of free resources, things that you can download, use the next day in class. And I have a lot of courses about helping students with autism increase their communication skills. So I hope that you will come on over and give it a look.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Rose, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Did you know that 2 out of 3 teachers turn to Teachers Pay Teachers for educational resources? As a seller on TPT, this makes me so excited. I love seeing educators turn to other educators for support in their classrooms. There are so many great resources on Teachers Pay Teachers, and this could be made even better if we could involve school budgets in this process. Enter TPT for Schools. TPT for Schools makes it easy for administrators and teachers to collaborate when making curricular decisions. TPT helps you set up a way of using school funds for these resources. This is a new program, and there's already over 5,000 schools registered. In the special ed world, this is even more important because we don't have that many resources, and the resources that are provided for us might not be so appropriate for our class. To learn more about TPT for Schools, visit schools.teacherspayteachers.com. Thanks for listening to the Autism Helper podcast. If you liked what you heard and want to hear more, hit subscribe. It would mean a lot to me if you left some feedback. Whether I'm working one-on-one with a student, doing a podcast like this one, or presenting for a PD, my goal is always to provide as much value as I can. So your feedback really helps me make sure I'm doing just that. If you have other topics you'd like me to cover, leave in the feedback or message me on social media. You can follow me at The Autism Helper on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Pinterest, or visit my website, theautismhelper.com. Thanks again for listening.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Having the right resources for your classroom is essential to making sure your classroom is running smoothly. At the Autism Helper Shop, we have all of the resources you need to make sure you have the behavior, communication, and curriculum supports for your students. Within our shop, we have adapted books, task cards, resources aligned to the VBMAP and the ABLES, behavior plan flowcharts, data sheets, curriculum. Everything you need, whether you are an early childhood teacher or a high school teacher, we have all of the resources that will meet those students' needs. So head over to shop.theautismhelper.com to check out all of our resources.